and welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. As always, you can find all that good stuff on the Wahoos over at thesabre.com and follow, subscribe to the Who's On podcast, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcast. All right. He's here. He's there. He's everywhere. It's Mike Barber joining us again. Talk some basketball today. We had the season opener for UVA men's basketball, picking up a win over Campbell. And a little bit later on, we're going to get to a preview for UVA football coming off their bye week ahead of Pittsburgh. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's when people start talking about it, I start realizing just how busy I've been the last week and a half. But it'll be nice to sit down and chop it up with you.
Yeah, let's get to it. All right. UVA opening the Ron Sanchez era with win number one, 65-56 over Campbell. After the game, I think you asked Ron Sanchez just how he felt about picking up win number one as the interim head coach at Virginia. Here is what Ron had to say to that.
I was very emotional. The first thing I thought about was I only need 363 more to catch up to Tony.
All right, just a few more wins to go. 363, you know.
Almost there.
Yeah, just a couple more away. All right, Mike, as we do with football, we're going to go into our big take from game one. What stood out to you, just initial impressions of seeing this Virginia basketball team for the first time this season?
Yeah, I think that it is a good roster. I think they have the right pieces to play the way that Ron Sanchez wants to play. Spoiler alert, that looks a lot like the way Tony Bennett wanted to play. And this is a coaching change that doesn't bring a ton of change at least in the X's and O's. The things that stood out were the freshmen, right? I thought Ish Sharma, the quickness with which he got off his shot, the comfort level there, I thought that was really encouraging. And then certainly Jacob Coffey. He gave me really positive Isaiah Wilkins vibes on the defensive end. Look, there were some times where I thought Jacob got beat one-on-one because he's young and that's going to happen. And I think that will change. But what I'm talking about with Wilkins was the help defense, the ability to recognize, to come over and block a shot or contest a shot and recover, get back to your man. He seems like the prototypical kind of undersized five, normal four, back of the pack line defender that this program has thrived with when you think about Wilkins or Akil Mitchell or any of those kind of guys. So those were the kind of the big takeaways. I really like the pieces. I think they fit together. And I think the young guys are ready to contribute.
Yeah, I do think there's really something there. My big take, again, with the freshmen, I wrote an article before the season because obviously Sanchez said neither was going to redshirt. And I really felt, you know, just seeing a little bit of them in the scrimmage, hearing from some different people that these guys were really going to play big roles this year, especially Kofi with, you know, kind of the lack of depth at the big positions. You know, you got Blake Buchanan, Elijah Saunders starting, but Kofi kind of seemed like that next guy up. And, you know, we saw with Elijah Saunders battling foul trouble throughout the night and kind of getting a quick hook. Kofi was the guy to step in off the bench, played a ton of minutes. I know UVA put out there that this was the most points someone has scored in their UVA debut since Jaden Gardner back in 2021 against Navy. That was a loss, if you remember. So a little bit better of a debut, but this is also the most points a true freshman has scored in their debut since Billy Barron. I never thought I was going to bring up Billy Barron again.
Going in the way back machine. And that to me is more relevant because look, debuts are great and all, but Jaden Gardner had played a lot of college basketball right before he played that game against Navy. What Jacob Coffey did last night was his first game in college action. To look that comfortable, to look that effective. I think it's a really good sign. Look, we've seen freshmen before play well in the first game or two or game three, and then they kind of fade away. And Tony was sort of, as many coaches are, kind of famous for paring down that rotation once you got into ACC play. But what I saw last night was guys who, when you pare down the rotation, those guys may still be part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Ish didn't get as much playing time as the game kind of went on, most of it coming in that first half, but he did look really good in those minutes. One interesting note I did in that research for that article is only one true freshman big man in the last decade at Virginia has gotten more than 15 minutes a game as a true freshman. And that was Blake Buchanan last season. So Kofi definitely looks well on his way to that. It looks like it's going to be a little bit more sustainable than Billy Barron's 19 points in his debut before he played a couple more games after that and eventually transferred out of Virginia.
But he'll always have that game.
Always have that game. Absolutely. All right. Real quick, starting lineup review for this game. One big surprise, but most of it was kind of how people expected. So you had Andrew Rohde at the point guard, which obviously that was the surprise. We'll talk more about Rohde a little bit later. Isaac McNealy at the two, TJ Power at the three, Elijah Saunders at the four, and Blake Buchanan starting inside. Obviously, some surprises there. So we can go ahead and get into Andrew Rohde at the point guard position. I know that was questions that you were asking last night. Just what were your impressions and how surprised were you that they went that direction?
Look, the whole vision for this thing kind of got dropped on its head a little bit when Jalen Worley left. That was a spot Jalen Worley was recruited to play. Day-Day Ames was recruited to kind of be the change of pace, speed things up, do some different things. I think ultimately Day-Day Ames is going to be the guy at that position. But look, it's been a two-year battle, if you will, between the fans and the coaches. The fans don't like Rohde because he shoots under 30%. He doesn't have a point scoring impact. The coaches love Rohde because they say he moves the right ball, he to go to the right spots, he does the right things, and he's dependable defensively. The interesting thing, X's and O's last night with Rohde playing, everything we've talked about in this offseason, about speeding up a little bit more, about bringing the ball up quicker, about pushing the tempo, it kind of goes away when you go with Rohde. Almost like a submarine in the war, right? He's going to zigzag to get through the ball pressure. And I thought Campbell very smartly pressured him, and that led to, look, here's a crazy stat for you. I checked KenPom this morning, and everybody hold your breath. I know it's one game. It is literally the smallest sample size you can have, but Virginia ranks last in the nation in adjusted tempo. So for all the talk of speeding it up, 65.6 possessions per 40 minutes, they're still last in the nation. Now, a lot of that had to do with Rohde bringing the ball up a little slower, Campbell pressuring, trying to avoid him getting up the court faster. Now, here's the reason. We asked, right? We asked Ron Sanchez, why? Why'd you go to Rohde? They wanted somebody on the floor who'd played more college basketball, who had played at Virginia. They wanted that experience level. Rohde's in his third year playing, first, second year at Virginia. So that was the reason behind it. Ultimately, though, I think it's Ames who gives them the best opportunity to get the ball up quickly, whatever they want to do in the half court, to not kill that time in the back court.
Yeah, and I do want to play a clip real quick from the Campbell coach McGeehan after the game because they fully expected Day-Day Ames to be the starter, and we're kind of surprised with Andrew Rohde out there, and they kind of liked that matchup better for them last night, and so I just wanted to hear what he had to say real quick.
Rohde did a decent job of like managing the game and trying to facilitate. But I felt like we also were able to bother him a little bit, and so not necessarily like he was still getting them into their stuff, but I felt like we were a little bit disruptive with him, where I think Ames would be harder to do that with.
All right, going off of that, you'd mentioned it before. Campbell got a lot of pressure. It seemed like they bothered Rohde throughout the night. He had a couple turnovers in this game, including some bad ones that I think Virginia fans were quick to point to on social media. If you look at the advanced metrics too, it was not painting a better picture for Andrew Rohde. He had the worst offensive rating of any player in the game last night at 56.4. His defense rating, I believe, was second or third worst on the team, so it wasn't that he was adding that much on that end. So my thought right now is, how soon do they go back to Day-Day Ames as the starter at point guard?
The schedule will dictate some of that, right? Yes, Coppin State, you can do, you would think, whatever you want there to try to get some rhythm. But the schedule gets tougher here. Villanova, albeit they got dropped on their heads by Columbia, but that is a step up in competition. What they're going to face in the Bahamas, I'm really looking forward to seeing. Does that expose some things? I think they have to have both in their bag this year, right? Like, I don't think it's just, okay, we're ready to go to Day-Day Ames. I think it's going to be kind of matchup driven. I think you're going to say, hey, there's going to be some spots where we want to be slower, and we're okay with Rhodey bringing the ball up. And the hard thing that we saw a year ago, and to be fair, a year ago it was exacerbated by Ryan Dunn's shooting problems, but when you had Rhodey and Dunn on the floor together, you had two guys who, respectfully, teams didn't have to guard them, right? I mean, Ryan Dunn at Boston College, they left him open for threes, and he was airballing them. You don't want to get in that situation where teams are scheming around the fact that they don't feel like they have to guard Rhodey. But we also heard kind of the intangible things, and that's what the coaching staff keeps hammering with Rhodey. But we heard Blake Buchanan say it. Andrew Rhodey's a guy who helps get people in the right position. Jacob Coffey said, he said, I can ask him, where am I supposed to be? He gets me. So there is a value with a young team to that. So I don't think it's about moving to Day-Day Ames all the time. I think it's going to be matchup driven. I think they like Andrew Rhodey with the ball in his hands, but there are going to be some games where they realize, hey, we need to get the ball up the court, and Ames is the guy for that.
Yeah, I was just surprised at the minutes allotment. It was 32 minutes of Andrew Rhodey, 10 minutes of Day-Day Ames off the bench. And even at times when Ames came into the game, he wasn't even the point guard. I think at one time McNeely was actually running the point and Day-Day Ames was playing off of him. So I was surprised that it was that imbalanced on day one.
Yeah, and credit to Campbell. I thought when Ames came in, because they had scouted him probably a little more, they were good at denying him the ball. I think that Ames was supposed to bring it up, and it got into a situation where, you know, Campbell was so aggressive denying him the ball. McNeely has worked in this offseason. When I talked to him, he said ball handling, passing, that's what he's been working on. So it's a very good backup plan to say, okay, McNeely will bring it up. And if I'm remembering the first time it happened, McNeely got it across and then quickly kicked it out to Ames, and they reset. But yeah, it was an interesting breakdown because maybe it's a look into Ron Sanchez's mind in terms of coaching this team. The game was tight. And in my mind, I thought, man, go to Ames and maybe you break it open. And in his mind, he thought, hey, this game is tight. I need my veteran out there. I've got to keep Rhodey in the game. So, two divergent ways of thinking. Ron Sanchez knows a lot more about this team and a lot more about coaching basketball than I do, so I'll defer to him. But I also was struck by that minute dispersal there.
And the positives for Rhodey, he did have 5 assists, tied for the team lead last night, and that's kind of what you're expecting. He's a guy that can get guys in the right position, make the right pass. It's just balancing it with those 4 turnovers, and then obviously you're not getting a lot offensively from him. And one of the biggest concerns that I had coming into the season, we talked about this on our season preview podcast, is getting that penetration into the paint, getting to the rim. There's not a lot of guys that can drive from the perimeter on this team and get into the paint. The only guy that seemed to do it consistently was Tane Murray on the night. He had 2 nice drives to the paint. That's what you're hoping for with Day-Day Ames. That's what you were hoping for with Jalen Worley when he was here. Because obviously I think as much as Virginia fans, you know, are upset with Andrew Rhodey shooting, I think Jalen Worley, I think that's the one guy he has a little bit of a jump over, you know, as a low bar there. But all right, moving back into the freshman now. Obviously, I didn't get a poll out last night for our Who's On podcast player of the game, but I think it was a pretty obvious one with Jacob Kofi and his impressive debut and Ishan Sharma. Do you expect it's interesting because Kofi, the way they talk about him is that a lot of the minutes that he plays are at the 4, and he did have to play a lot more at the 5 last night just because of Elijah Saunders' foul trouble, and it kind of looks like they want to play small ball with him. But where do you expect him to see most of his minutes moving forward?
It, don't get hung up on positions with this team, because I think Elijah Saunders is a guy who can play the 5, the 4, or the 3, and I think they're really open to moving him around. Like, there are a lot of situations where I think Saunders and Coffey can play together. I think you will see that happen. Last night, yes, it was Saunders in some foul trouble, opened the way for Coffey to get more minutes, and then he did such a nice job with them that the game kind of dictated where they went. But look, there's going to be games where they're going to want, Buchanan at the 5, Saunders at the 4, and maybe even Coffey at the 3. You want to go really big, try to overwhelm somebody. There's going to be games where they go small. The great thing about him is he fits into both those lineups, right? He's a guy who can run the floor. He's a guy who can be athletic, who can handle it a little bit. So if you're going small, you don't have to yank him. If you're going big, he's versatile enough and can defend different positions that you can slide him over to the wing and he can play there. And again, I really liked his instincts defensively, which, you know, the big thing with Saunders is he can defend lots of positions. If Jacob can do that too, they can spell each other. But two, if you have them on the floor together, you're a very versatile team that can change up your looks. And hey, I think That was a long way of saying I think he has the skills to play in almost any lineup, and that's where I think his future is.
I am really intrigued to see that Buchanan, Kofi, and Saunders lineup, just because I think the defensive versatility, and I was skeptical of it before the season when someone threw it out there, Cuts from the Corner, he threw it out on our preview podcast, and I was skeptical because I was like, okay, I know they say Jacob Kofi is a good shooter, he can stretch it out, but is he actually? Because you know, that changes. You know, other guys in the past have been lauded as good shooters coming out of high school. Well, his shot actually looked good, and he made the 2 out of 3 of the ones that he took. The third one that he missed was, you know, at the buzzer, and you just had to throw up a shot at the rim. So I like that. Another guy we talked a little bit about is, you know, Ish Sharma. For my money, that is the quickest release I've seen in years at Virginia. I mean, probably Kyle Guy was the last one to have a release that quick. I thought he was going to pump fake that first three because I was like, that guy's closing in on him really fast, but he got that thing off in like 0.2 seconds. Just your impressions of him and that shot. Do you agree? Is that the quickest you've seen?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the strengths of his game, right? And we saw glimpses of that in the blue-white scrimmage, and you never know, right? Because it's an inter-squad scrimmage and you're not playing for your life, so to speak, with your hair on fire. But he showed that skill set. He showed that skill set in the closed scrimmages, and he's shown that skill set in practice. It was interesting to see it unfold that way. I mean, Campbell's coach said it was like he caught it, never brought it down. The shot was right back up. And, you know, he is a player who can score in some of that mid-range area too. That's a big thing McNeely has worked on. And that's the kind of thing that can open up a defense. Look, we're going to talk about, I'm sure, TJ Power, his ability to shoot from the outside. That's going to be something they use to spread the floor. Jacob Coffey can do that. Sharma can do that, but he can also do that half penetration. He can get in partway and hit that mid-range jumper. And that really can give defenses fits. I mean, we've seen some good Virginia teams that were built around a Dre Hunter working from, you know, elbow, the free throw extended, that kind of an area. Sharma's going to get there a little differently. I think he's going to put it on the deck to get there, but he's got that shot in his bag, and that's going to make him really valuable for them.
Yeah, I just, like you said, it's a versatile offensive game. I know the shooting is what's going to get the headlines and what people are going to most pay attention to, but I think even talking to, you know, Isaiah Wilkins before the season, talking to some of the other teammates, you know, they're like, you know, he can do a lot. He can put the ball on the floor, get into that mid-range, and didn't look overwhelmed defensively last night. I know I put out earlier defensive and offensive ratings from last night. It's a very small sample size, first of all, but and he had like a 69 defensive rating, which obviously that's not sustainable. And, you know, it's not, you know, I don't think it's really indicative of everything just because of the minutes he played, but he didn't look lost out there. And he looked like he was competitive. He had a block shot in there too. You know, had a 3 rebounds, which is pretty good for a guard, 2 assists. So he does a little bit of everything for Virginia. Going with just obviously Campbell made this game really close. And I think part of that is they shot 11 to 29 from three. First of all, they shot 29 threes. That was more than, I think, more than half of their shot attempts on the night. And even Campbell's coach said he wasn't expecting them to shoot that many. He just had to get up shots against this Virginia defense. We've seen in the past, some hot shooting nights have kind of spoiled Virginia's pack line defense. Are you concerned just with, you know, the athleticism on this team to be able to get out and close out?
No, you know, I think you just made the key point. This is the story for 15 years, right? Virginia's going to deny you penetration. They're going to force you to swing the ball around the perimeter and take a three-pointer. And if you come out UMBC style and you drain them all, it's going to be a long night for Virginia. Look, I mentioned Jacob Coffey, his ability to help and then retreat. I think they've got some guys who close well on shooters. I think they're going to be fine there. I think they're going to be what Virginia basketball is. Look, if you come out and shoot 57% from three against them, you got a good chance to win, right? If you come out and you shoot 24%, they're going to run you out of the gym, blow you out of the gym. If you're somewhere in between, you're going to have what I consider Virginia basketball, a game that's a 5 or 6 possession game and can go one way or the other. So am I alarmed by it? No, because I've been watching it for 15 years. I watched them win a national title with that formula. So it's what you expect. I think they've got a chance to get better defensively than we saw last night. It's a lot of guys playing the pack for the first time. Look, we've covered guys who've been here 4 or 5 years, and in their last years are saying, I'm still working on getting down the pack line defense. Now you've got guys transferring in who've never played it or played a variation of it. You've got freshmen playing big minutes. What I'm saying is I think the defensive effort was there last night. There's a lot to tighten on that end, but it was the opener with a ostensibly a new coach, albeit a familiar face, and a really massively remade roster. I'm not concerned about anything after last night, just off of last night.
Campbell shot 3 of 17 from three in their opener, a game they won by 47 points. So it was unexpected for them to go 11 for 29, shoot that much and make that much. So we'll give them the benefit of the doubt on that. One of the, I guess the big take outside of the freshman for me, the one thing that I noticed throughout the night is it really seems like Ron Sanchez is still really tinkering with these lineups. There's a lot of quick substitutions. Obviously we saw, you know, with foul trouble with Elijah Saunders, he was coming in out of the lineup, really didn't get, you know, into a groove out there, still ended up with 11 points. So I think that kind of shows you like he will get his points when he is out there and he can get into kind of a rhythm out there. What did you think of all the lineup tinkering? It seemed, you know, they played nine guys. It seemed like they were kind of shuffling in a lot. And I think Isaac McNealy was the only player for like the first 10 minutes of the game that didn't sub out.
Yeah, nine guys in a non-conference game sounds like a coach that we know and that did pretty well here. I mean, that was always Tony's thing, right? You're going to juggle those lineups. You're going to look for matchups. You're going to experiment with some things. And then you're going to pare down that rotation come ACC play. Look, that's not revolutionary to Tony either. It's not like they reinvented the wheel and Ron's sticking with it. You know, I think that's a large part what non-conference play is for. And in this NIL transfer portal era, when your roster is so massively remade, that's what you need to do, right? Like, yeah, some of it is basketball strategy. Okay, Campbell's doing this, let's do this. But some of it is just the necessity of, I want to see these five guys together. I want to see what happens if we try this. You've got to do it now because you can't, you know, for the G-rated podcast, you can't mess around and find out when you're in conference play, right? That's not going to work. So you've got to do all that experimenting right now. Look, this program has been known for, you might sit for 2 weeks and then start and play 20 something minutes. I don't think that's going to change with Ron Sanchez. I think he's asking guys to buy in. I think he's going to be matchup driven. I think we're going to see different lineups game to game, night to night. And he told us with Rhodey, when did he decide Rhodey was starting at point? The night before.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is the season opener. It's not like a tournament game where you're like, okay, who are we playing? We got to, I mean, he had, granted, he was thrown into the job, but he had since Tony retired to say who's going to start at point guard. They decided the night before. So I think Ron is going to be very similar in that vein of what is the matchup? What gives us the best chance? And then you get out there and you see some things and not be afraid. And it's why this roster is cool with the versatile pieces, with the guys who can play different spots. It allows him the freedom to do that.
Yeah, and we've heard in the past Tony Bennett talk about, you know, playing to the matchups and maybe changing up the lineups depending on matchups. But it really never changed that like too drastically in the starting lineup, at least. It seems like with Ron, like that actually, like you might actually see those changes play out over the course of a season. Again, it's one game sample size, but just through that one game. I was really excited about Blake Buchanan coming into the season. I thought, you know, freshman year up and down, he really needed to put some weight on. He did that. But I always liked the positioning that he got in as a freshman. I thought he got into good spots. And last night, the finishing wasn't where I was hoping it would be, but still at the end of the day, when you're coming out with a stat line, that's 10 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 blocks, showed a lot of really good stuff there and played out on the perimeter a good bit too, on defense. So really looks like a key piece for this team. And I think on the preview podcast, I said, you know, we talked about how many guys do you think could average double digit points? And you know, we all said McNealy and Saunders probably, and Buchanan was my third shot just because I think he's going to get himself into enough situations. So far I look okay, 'cause he got 10 points.
Yeah. And I think you hit on the most important thing there, the 5 assists, especially in these non-conference games, he's got a size advantage. He won't have that in ACC play. Now, I think he put on good weight, right? Like I can go put out weight in the offseason, but it ain't going to make me a better athlete. He put on muscle. He's lean and he's strong, and I think he's better suited. But in these non-conference games, what you want to see is him really assert himself. Now, if you're an opposing coach, the first thing you think when you're playing up, if you will, against an ACC opponent is, man, these guys are going to mash us on the low block. They doubled and post-trapped him a lot, and I thought he was really good passing the ball out of those double teams. Not passing the ball to get out of trouble, passing the ball aggressively to make something happen. That shows a basketball IQ of what's going on. Look, the first thing you want to teach a young post player is if they come get you, get rid of the ball. Great, that's step one. The next level of that is, hey, when they come get you, that means they left somebody else. Can you move that ball somewhere where you give us the advantage? And I thought that's where Blake Buchanan really showed some growth last night. I thought his passes out of traps really put Virginia in position to score.
I love the big-to-big passing between him and Kofi. They really seem like they have a good chemistry there. I joked with him, is it a Pacific Northwest connection or something there? Fascinating thing is we were talking about, you know, Andrew Rohde as the point guard. You know, who had the highest usage rate last night? That was Blake Buchanan. So I kind of joked on Twitter, point Buchanan, but I mean, at times they are running some offense through him down in the low post. Any final thoughts on basketball before we head over to football?
No, other than the fact that they're really intriguing. Like, that's the word to use. Like, I don't think there's a thesis here. I don't think there's a conclusion here, and there's not supposed to be after one game, but a lot of the questions I had about this team going in, I still have them. A lot of the hope I had for this team, I still have it. It's kind of all out there, and it's going to be really interesting to see how Ron Sanchez molds it. Because, you know, the thing I keep coming back to is, man, they've got good pieces. They could put it together. They need a great coaching job. Tony Bennett had some years where he took some teams that were flawed and he found a way to make them competitive, successful, and pretty darn good. That's Ron's task now.
Absolutely. All right. We're going to head over into football coming up after the break here on the Who's On podcast, preview their game against Pitt coming up this Saturday. We'll see you after the break. Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. My guest is Mike Barber. We are transitioning from basketball, the season opener for the Wahoos, and we are getting into football now. Coming back after the bye week after a, let's just face it, a really, really disappointing loss to North Carolina before the break. Obviously, I've talked about on the podcast, probably I would rank it as one of the two most disappointing losses of the Tony Elliott era, just in terms of competitiveness. I think I put it right there with the Virginia Tech loss at the end of last season. Just didn't show up, you know, couldn't get much going. And so coming back off of that, now you've got number 18 Pitt, as according to the College Football Playoff rankings, which is the only rankings people will care about moving forward. They're 23rd in the AP poll. They lost a game to SMU, which is a big game for them, not only in the ACC, but in the College Football Playoff rankings and kind of for their season as a whole. So looking at this game now, just kind of what are your thoughts just coming off that bye week? Obviously, you saw a little bit of the North Carolina game, probably saw enough to get a gist of it.
I actually saw the good part. I was there for the first quarter. It was pretty competitive, and maybe it's my fault for having to head to another assignment and things fell apart. Look, Preston, what's really disappointing and important about that loss and coming forward is that was the game that gets you to 5. The back end of the schedule is brutal. Right at Pittsburgh, at Notre Dame, SMU, at Virginia. It's a brutal end to the season. Very easy to say 0-4 there. But I think if you beat Carolina and you've got that juice, that motivation of, hey, it's just one more. Look, a year ago, nobody expected them to go to Chapel Hill and beat North Carolina, who was number 10 at the time. That's what your look, we just came out of elections on Tuesday, right? So if you're in the spin room, and you're Virginia, that would be your spin. Nobody expected us to go beat the number 10 Tar Heels. We can get one of these. Now you got to get two of them. And it really takes the wind out of your sails, right? It really pops your balloon a little bit. Had they lost a competitive close game, maybe it's a little bit different because you've got a little bit more mojo. It will be very interesting to see what Tony Elliott was able to accomplish in the bye week in terms of just keeping the fire going. I think that's been a good thing about Tony Elliott. I think the team has played hard for him. I don't think there's a lot of quit in his program, but this is a tough tipping point and testing point because everything is wonderful if you beat Carolina. Because even if you don't get any of the last 4 weeks are spent talking about bowl eligibility. Now, the last 4 weeks are teetering on, is this program headed in the right direction? And that's a narrative that just kind of drags everybody down.
Yeah, and only a one-win improvement at this point. So yeah, you're right. It's teetering on those two storylines. And I said before the season, I've said it all season, you know, I always expect Virginia, just kind of after that North Carolina win last year, you've seen it. They pull out a win out of nowhere. And you're like, there are some games that are really going to be tough games towards the end of the schedule, but you kind of feel like, all right, I think they could probably pop up and get one of these games, surprisingly. But yeah, like you said, to get two, that's a lot. And that's why their odds at getting to six wins, according to ESPN, dropped by like 40% after that North Carolina
huge
loss. All right, looking at real quick, just a depth chart update, really more of an injury update this week for UVA. Brian Stevens, Ty Furnish, Yuga Nana, all expected back. They've all been back at practice, which is massive. If you look at that offensive line and who they were having to play last week, they started Charlie Patterson at guard. They moved Noah Josie into center. Blake Steen spent time at guard. You lost Jimmy Chris for the season. Most likely he had had surgery over the bye week or had a procedure. So offensive line looks a little bit healthier. Hopefully that gets you back. Obviously, Brian Stevens is massive for this team. Also massive for this team, Antonio Clary back fully practicing. Tony Elliott said his knee swelling stayed down over the bye week, so they are hoping that he gets back. It's kind of been teetering, you know, if he's going to do it, if he's not going to do it. And it looks like this might be the week that they get Antonio Clary back. Obviously huge. He was probably their best defensive player before he went down earlier this season. Chris Tyree back to full health. James Jackson, still a game time decision though. And then Trell Harris out 2 to 3 more weeks after he had the procedure on his knee. They are, Tony Elliott said, considering a red shirt. Just going to kind of see. He has one game to play with before he hits that 4-game mark for red shirting. Any of that stand out to you just from the injury updates?
It does. And it's, sorry, it's not going to be focused on the Pitt game, but the number of names you read off there on the offensive line, one, it speaks to the struggles they had in the last game and all, but it also speaks to something they've done nicely in this program in terms of developing some depth and options. Look, when you lose that many guys on your offensive line, you're not going to be as good. But they were functional on the offensive line. They were not good, but they were functional. That's a huge step. So when you talk about evaluating what Tony Elliott's program has done to this point, that's sort of a nitty-gritty thing that I think people should look at. There are a lot of times in Virginia's recent history and a lot of programs around the country that go 6 or 7 deep on the offensive line. I think this team feels okay going 8, 9 deep really on the offense, and that is progress. Again, nobody wants to hear about progress when you're playing poorly and you're losing and those things, but just as you read that update, that was kind of the thing in my mind was, man, that's a lot of names that I've heard of. That's a lot of names that have played some football on the offensive line. I think that bodes well for the direction the program's going. You want to talk about Pittsburgh, you need those frontline guys in there. And if you're going to do what you said, right, you always think Virginia's going to steal a game. Virginia, full strength, can steal a game down the stretch. Virginia, makeshift, it's not happening. So they really need, particularly Stevens, but all those pieces, all hands on deck here.
I feel really good about the line when Stevens is in there. When he's not in there, I don't feel as good. Just because he's that leader, he's that kind of balancing force for the rest of the offensive line. And so if it was just Ty Furnish out, you know, that's a loss, especially because you don't have his backup, you got Anana, but I felt they could make up for that. But then when Brian Stevens came down with pneumonia towards the end of last week and you lose both of those guys, because Ty Furnish is also the backup center, now you're having to move Noah Josie, who is one of the better offensive linemen, to a position that he does not have any experience in at the last second. And that kind of throws everything off. But I do agree with your point. The offensive line depth very much improved this year. They've been able to rotate a lot of guys in there and, you know, make up for guys like Mikael Boley missing time at the beginning of the season, make up for, you know, Ty Furnish missing some time, and make up for some of these injuries because of the depth that they built. Trell Harris, that's a really interesting one. And we'll talk about kind of one of the big topics this week is, you know, who are you throwing to down the field? It's been a big topic since Trell Harris went down. The possibility of him redshirting, I think, would be good, because I think if you look at this team and what they're losing next year, It'd be great to get a guy like that back. So interesting to see where that kind of goes. All right, getting into the press conference rewind for the week. Little bit of talk going into the bye week. Not a lot, but a little bit. Tony Elliott saying they're going to evaluate everything during the bye week. One of those things was the quarterback position. He emerged from the bye week, doubling down on his thoughts before the season. Here's Tony Elliott.
It was a tough day at the office for everybody, the last outing. And, you know, in fairness to Calandrio, I mean, you know, when you're taking a three-step drop and you're at the top of your drop and your third step's in the ground and guys are at your, you know, on your back or at your feet, I mean, it doesn't matter who you got, you know, at quarterback.
Not a lot of, you know, real talk about a possible quarterback change, but it was something that they should probably evaluate. You know, Tony Musket looked good in a couple of his cameo appearances, and you know, Anthony Calandria has, you know, taken care of the ball better before that North Carolina game, but also hasn't been as explosive. And you know, some of that is, as Tony Elliott said, it's hard to evaluate a guy when, you know, he takes a three-step drop and there's a guy in his face already. So, probably the right move going forward with Anthony Calandria.
It's interesting because Calandria, I think, functions better with that five-step drop. He's not the tallest guy. I think you and I have talked about this, but I like the offensive package they run when Musket comes in. I'd like to see them run that with Calandria. I know they're worried. You know, Tony takes three steps and gets rid of the ball. Anthony tends to take five or a moving pocket or roll out. That's where he's at his best. To me, if Anthony Calandria is going to become a well-rounded quarterback, you need him to do some of that three-step quick release stuff. I would love to see them take that, and I don't know if they've got different play sheets or how they organize it, but pull out the Tony Musket play sheet when Anthony Calandria is in the game, and let me see him do that. Look, they've seen it in practice, right? They probably know what suit. But when I watch that team play from the quarterback standpoint, I think they're giving Musket the best chance to succeed with those plays, and Calandria, they're asking a lot from him. I'd love to see maybe there's something in between, but I'd love to see even if it's hey, taking that shotgun snap a little bit deeper than you normally do and get the ball out a little quicker. I would like to see that evolution in Calandria's game if you're going to stick with him.
Yeah, my thing with Musket when he came in, you're right. It's 1 2-step drop and release the ball, and it's out on time. It's accurate. And with Calandria, a lot of what he talked about, he focused on during the bye week was his footwork, was his accuracy with the ball. Just kind of, I guess, getting more on rhythm because it seems like he has not been on rhythm since. I mean, maybe the Maryland game. It's like it seemed like it's been a while since we've seen the Calandria that. Kind of early in the season was kind of quick with the ball, getting it out quick, getting it to a variety of different receivers and kind of moving the ball down the field, taking those little plays and not worrying about the big chunk plays, but taking those too when they came.
Yeah, and don't get hung up on the idea of Tyler Neville as a dump-off guy, right? As an emergency option. Like the middle of the field is where this offense made its living a year ago with Malik Washington. I know Chris Tyree was hurt. That kind of changed the plans. But with Tyree getting back, with Neville over there, I think there's a middle of the field that you can hit with the three-step drop passes that can be really effective. And it can offset some of the loss of Trell on the outside. Look, you still need somebody to go downfield and take the top off the defense, if nothing else, but to keep them honest. But you can also do some things in the middle of the field that I think will open things up for them. I'd like to see more of that.
Yeah, and it was interesting hearing Calandria talk about, you know, who is going to take up the top of the defense right now without Trell Harris. Tony Elliott talked about it too. Obviously, you get Chris Tyree back healthy, and that is a guy that certainly has some speed. It hasn't historically been, you know, as a guy that to get downfield and get past the defensive backs, but certainly a guy that could use there. J.R. Wilson, Tony Elliott feels he's kind of up to full speed now, and you know, maybe he's a guy that could do that. We certainly saw, you know, he got behind the North Carolina defense in that game and scored his first touchdown with the big 60-plus yard touchdown catch. So there's some guys, and I really would love to see, because I think that it works so well. Just obviously Malachi Fields, you have him kind of underneath doing a lot of that kind of, you know, short, medium range passing. And then you got Tyler Neville over the middle. Then you just need that one guy that can get behind the defense. And, you know, they're trying a couple different guys there. He mentioned J.R. Wilson, Chris Tyree, and Andre Green as well.
Yeah, I think they have the pieces there to be really effective. I think they have one of everything. I don't know if the depth is where they want it to be, but it just seems scheme-wise that they haven't used all of those pieces. And look, again, guys, they haven't really been full. right? When Tyree was out, you didn't really have the confidence in the slot position. With Trell out, you don't have the deep threat. The teams did for a stretch kind of key on Neville. But you have all those pieces kind of getting back. You've got to – sometimes you got to take a shot with a guy that isn't, you know, the guy you'd like to take the shot with, just to put that on film and show people. And I'd like to see them get to that point where teams are coming in, the passing game's a little less predictable, and it's a little quicker.
Yeah. All right. Moving to what Tony Elliott said on the defensive side of the ball is Pitt has kind of struggled. Teams are starting to get back to their quarterback, Eli Holstein, over the past couple of weeks. But Virginia, not really known for getting to the quarterback this season. They have 12 sacks. They rank 15th in the ACC at this point. But Elliott sees a little bit of promise on the defensive side of the ball. He thinks they've got some more development from a pass rush standpoint. Here's what he had to say.
I've seen progress in just the development of our guys from a pass rush move standpoint, and I'm hopeful that it's going to start, you know, paying dividends on Saturdays.
It's been up and down this year. We saw in that Wake Forest game, I think they had 6 sacks in that game. That seems like a long time ago. That's about half of their season total right now. Do you believe what Tony Elliott is saying, that they have some development in that pass rush game? Maybe they could get to the quarterback going forward.
Yeah, you know, I think they're getting better in terms of maybe generating some pressure. I still think they're a ways away from getting the guy on the ground. Holstein will be an interesting matchup in that regard. He's a talented guy, and he's out of necessity. he's learned to avoid the rush and to deal with pressure. Look, it is always going to be the case that you're better if you can generate that pressure. If you're Virginia, what do you want to risk to get there? Because if you want to bring a linebacker, I know James Jackson's out, but I like him on pressures. Cam Robinson has the speed and the athleticism. If you want to make that happen, you can make that happen. The question is, what is the cost? I'll be very interested to see how John Rozinski calls this game. John's core philosophy is sort of a bend but don't break. Keep guys in front of you, give up the short stuff, don't get beat for a big play. It's sort of against his nature to throw the kitchen sink to get pressure. But I think you're at the point of the season where you're saying, if we can't get it any other way, we may have to take some chances. So it'll be interesting to see. Maybe this is a game where quarter one, you try to do it the old way. And if it's not there, you start to see them get a little more exotic in quarter two and quarter three and find some ways to rattle Holstein. Because, again, he's proven that when he gets into a rhythm, he's a pretty darn good quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. He's looked really impressive this year, right? Transitioning now to more of the UVA and Pitt preview. Where do you think Virginia is most vulnerable against this Pitt team? Again, just suffered their first loss of the season last week to SMU, ranked 18th in the college football playoff ranking. So a really good team coming into Acrisure Field, or really fine, always known as Heinz Field.
Yeah, the ketchup bottle. It'll always be the ketchup bottle in our heart. My concern here, and this is a little bit of a broken record, but it's up front, right? Is Pittsburgh going to be the team that, you know, is Virginia going to be the team that Pittsburgh gets its protection right against? You mentioned the struggle, certainly statistically. That makes Pittsburgh very dangerous. If they're able to protect Holstein, run the football, that they're a great balanced program. Look, what I love about Pittsburgh this year is what's scary about this matchup for Virginia. I thought they were a good, solid team that didn't have a quarterback. And all of a sudden, they have a quarterback. Well, they're still a good, solid team around him. And, you know, my concern for Virginia is, can you win what's going to be a muck it up physical kind of game? Can you run the football? When Virginia's been at their best this year, they've been making gains on the ground. Can they do that against Pittsburgh? That's tough. Can they get pressure on Holstein? Can they bottle up the run? It's along the lines where we mentioned already on the show, right? Two things: not getting great pressure from their D line if you're Virginia, and guys in and out of the lineup on the offensive line. So strength on strength, I think it's a bad matchup in that regard for Virginia.
I'll kind of combine the next two, because we're going to go where UVA can attack Pitt. You know, Pitt comes in with the fourth highest scoring offense in the ACC, third in passing offense. UVA, 16th in passing defense. You flip it the other way, though. I think Virginia is 7th in the ACC in passing offense, and Pitt is 14th in passing defense. So I think we could see the ball go through the air a lot in this game. And it's just who wins that battle? Who is taking advantage of the other's, you know, pass defense more? And, you know, UVA gives up a lot of yards to the air because, you know, they play off a little bit more. They kind of give that space because they're trying to avoid giving up the big play, which they didn't do against North Carolina. North Carolina was able to get the big plays against them. So yeah, can they avoid the big plays against this pit passing attack and Eli Holstein? And vice versa, can Virginia take those big plays and take advantage of that Pitt passing defense that is ranked 14th right now in the ACC? Where do you think UVA will look to attack Pitt?
Well, and the encouraging sign there is Louisville is a big play passing game, and I thought Virginia held up well.
Really well, yeah.
In that regard, not giving up the big play. You know, there was one late, of course, that was costly. But so that part is encouraging. I do think, if you remember under Bronco, there was the Brennan Armstrong, was it Brennan Armstrong, Kenny Pickett game? And, you know, it was going to be potentially for the division. And, you know, this has a little bit of the feel of not with the same stakes, but the potential shootout. Like, what are these two quarterbacks going to do? I think Calandria has a chance to cut it loose in this game and maybe put up big numbers. I don't know if that equals a win or a loss, but that'll be fun. And I think Holstein, if the protection is there, has a chance to do the same thing. So in that regard, I think it'll be interesting to see if we get a shootout. I will just tell you my personal track record. When I go into a game expecting a shootout, you're usually looking at 17-13 and two teams combining for turnovers and rushing yards. So my track record is terrible, but on paper, you would think, hey, this is a kind of game that you could get a score of 42-35 and some big plays in the throw game.
Yeah, I was expecting that a couple times this season. I've been in the same boat with you. I keep predicting scores in the 30s all year, and it has not come to fruition. I think the Louisville game, like, that was a lot lower scoring than we anticipated. Boston College was about where we expected because Boston College didn't allow a ton of points coming into that game. All right, player to watch. Who are you looking at on the UVA side?
Can I pick two? It's sort of, it's the running game, right? It's okay. What can they do from the running back position? So whether it's Kobe Pace or where they go with the carries there, I think Virginia can set up everything we just talked about big plays, Calandria, the high scoring. They've got to be able to functionally run the football. And with the line the way it is, it's going to mean running backs making plays. Breaking tackles, yeah, big plays, that's great. But it's got to be the simple plays. It's got to be the two-yard gain that you push forward for three or four, right? That's where the difference is, because then you're in the second and manageable, third and manageable. I think that sets up everything we want to see from big plays in the throw game. You can't get swallowed up in the run game. And again, when Virginia's been at their best this year, now the line's been healthy and better, but they've gotten that production from the run game. So if it's a player, give me one of the running backs or two of them to break some tackles, to fall forward, to move some piles, and to make those be, look, I'm not saying 7.6 yards per carry. I'm saying get me 3.4 yards per carry. So I feel like I'm ahead of the chains. To me, that's the key for Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, you're not far off. A couple of weeks ago when we previewed the UNC game with Matt Schaub, he picked the running backs too. He was expecting them to, like you were saying, just kind of make those plays, kind of help set up Calandria, help them set up for success. And then they followed that up with rushing for 26 yards combined between the two of them, between Kobe Pace and Xavier Brown. So didn't have a lot of touches in that game. And that was one thing that, you know, kind of a throwaway question at the end, but asking Tony Elliott, you know, what do you expect from Xavier Brown's role for this team? Because it has been a big question mark. And games that they've gotten behind early, they kind of toss him out, and they're going with Kobe Pace in there if they're going with any running back at all. It's interesting. And he referenced, you know, the reason Xavier Brown might not get more playing time right now is because pass blocking, which seems like a very old school coach mentality, is like, if you can't pass block, then you can't play. But yeah, he just makes so many good things. That's why I tweet out every single time he touches the ball, like, good things happen. And it has been the case.
Yeah, and he is the style of running back that you want against Pittsburgh. When I'm talking about the carry's not there, but it's still positive. He's just a physical runner. He's going to lower his shoulder,
which is so surprising for a guy of his frame.
Very small, and he's worked really hard in his career, and it hasn't always worked out, to try to keep healthy, to do different things. I mean, I remember him talking about him and Paris Jones, and the friendship they formed was because they were both in the training room constantly trying to keep those undersized bodies ready to play. But I think Xavier Brown is exactly the style of back that can make nothing into a little something, and a little something goes a long way against a team like Pittsburgh.
Yeah, my player to watch, I guess I'm going with a group, but if I had to pick a specific player, it's Brian Stevens coming back into the lineup. But that offensive line overall, can you give Anthony Calandra even a second to throw the football, get those downfield passes? Because that's what we're saying here is he doesn't have time to get the ball down the field. So if you can just buy him some time, and I know Pittsburgh has a good defensive front. They historically have always had good defensive fronts. So you look at the players that have played there over the years, Aaron Donald, Kalijah Yancey, a bunch of others that I'm forgetting off the top of my head right now. But they have always had good defensive fronts. They have another good defensive front this year. So can you just buy Calandria enough time to get the ball out? All right, it's time. Everyone's favorite time, score prediction time. Pittsburgh comes into this as a 7.5 point favorite, so about a touchdown favorite in this game. Over under in this one is 57.5, so maybe you get that shoot up that we keep calling for, Mike. Where are you going? What is your prediction for this game?
Yeah, I actually like Pittsburgh by double figures in this. I think they win it by 10. You know, I'm thinking something that 38, 27, somewhere in that range. Shows you my math skills because that's 11. But yeah, I think, look, I don't think Virginia is going to get boat raced. I think Virginia is going to make enough big plays in the throw game to keep this thing close, to stay in it. I think they're going to play hard. I think they're going to come out of the bye week feeling like, let's make up for what happened last week. But I like Pittsburgh. I like Pittsburgh's football team. I think they're better. I think they're at home. I think they win this one by double figures.
I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to call my shot. I said all year that they're going to get one of these games out, and I'll say it's going to be this week at Heinz Field, or the artist formerly known as Heinz Field, rather. I'm going to go 33-30 for Virginia. Late field goal to win it, which really hasn't happened this year. It's been kind of late touchdown drives, but yeah, I'll call it 33-30. Virginia finally gets that win. Maybe you get a little bit more optimism going forward after that.
Absolutely massive for the narrative, because you win that game, the last part of the season is going to be really entertaining with something on the line.
Yeah, I think you're kind of rooting a little bit for it, just a better narrative around
better
this
story,
program.
100%. Yeah. It's a better storyline to say, go grab one, and then look, you're a massive underdog the rest of the way, but how much fun would it be if we're in Blacksburg the final weekend?
I knew that's where you're going.
Right. I mean, that is what, even in the down years for Virginia, that's been the thing, is because there were all those years under Frank Beamer where Tech was the one desperate for the sixth win. And even though they were the favorite, they had to get it done. Look, Tech Virginia is going to be fun no matter what because of the rivalry. But if there's a little something on the line there beyond, it makes it even more special.
It'd be a lot better, a lot more entertaining. I think a lot more people would, you know, put down the Thanksgiving, you know, leftovers if they could watch, you know, a 5-win Virginia team going in there. All right, that is it for this week's edition of the Who's On podcast. We covered a lot today, Mike, so I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and always look forward to talking to you.
All right, we will be back next week. A little bit more basketball talk after we get another UVA game under the belts. And we will also recap this Pitt game. We will see you then.